Heroes rise, heroes fall. I see them on the front line, standing tall. They're risking life and limb to answer the call. But what they fighting for?
Don't know, don't care, just along for the ride. But if it warm us then, I'm gonna make sure I'm gonna win inside.
Welcome to the podcast, the live stream bonus question and answer podcast of the Dungeon Dads Network. Wait, I've got to move. Darn it, I got to move your windows. See what happens, Tom? You screwed it all up. Ah, there we go. Oh, and it's still messed up. Well, here we go. This is. I don't know how to fix this in OBS while we're doing this, so it's going to be what it is. Sam is breaching the lines of the grid. Yeah, it really is. It really is. Oh, man, hold on a second, guys. They can only hear me. Ooh. Hold on. Let me see. Let me do this. Okay, hold on. That's a good thing that I was playing host. Let me see here. Let's do... Oh, wait. Hold on.
We should just give him the Zoom link. You can hear me. Oh, I love it.
All right. And now they should be able to hear everybody. Hello. Give me a thumbs up in the chat if you can hear all of us.
Testing.
And me too.
Can you hear John Watson? John Watson, ladies and gentlemen.
Just give it a second. We're on a slight delay. But if they can hear Tom, they can hear everybody. Yeah,
they got
everybody.
Can hear me.
Hey.
All right. Sorry, guys. We haven't played with this software since the last time we did a live stream, you know, when we were like 25. So, but anyway, as I was saying,
25 episodes.
Welcome. As always, I am Tim, and I'm joined here by John Watson, Iona Seelhavind, Sam playing Schnobik, or who played Schnobik, and who is breaking the lines of the grid, and Tom, our infamous dungeon master.
How's it going, everybody? This is our sort of live final episode of Ever War Must End. And so we wanted to go ahead and do answer some of the questions that you might have. I think John and Tim are monitoring the YouTube questions. Sam is on the Reddit Live and LinkedIn simulcast. and I'm monitoring our live feed from Pravda, and so you can throw some questions there, but I think we should just go straight into these questions that I have, if that's all right, fellas.
Yeah, I'm ready.
Hit me. Listen, so, I prepared for this episode by not reading any questions, so I could
also
be in the moment.
Not read any questions.
So. Okay, great.
All right.
So unfortunately, a lot of these questions are for me. But
yeah,
because
unfortunately
a lot of it
for
is
the
like,
audience.
Well, you know, it's a lot of it is like, you know, end of the season, end of the era, like people asking about like how we put
what
together
how happened, I, what might have yeah. gone this way, what might have gone that way, what was the story behind so and so.
Yeah, so let's start with Tar Badger. Asked what were Tom's original plans for Abel and how much did the story pivot from his original vision? So I'm going to just throw this over to you, Sam, because it's your character, not mine. I think that he's asking about some of the like large, like the secrets. And I think we may have talked about this a while back, but
go
ahead.
There are a couple of tricks you can pull to make it seem like you've been planning something for a long time, even though you haven't.
Yeah.
So like very early on, we were like, oh, he's got a secret. We don't know what that secret is yet. And then like 15 episodes in, we're like, oh, I bet the secret has something to do with like X, Y, and Z. And he was like, oh yeah, that's a good idea. It should be. And then 10 episodes later, we're like, So what if that's like just the first part of the secret, and then there's an extra part of the secret that's sort of like this, right? Yeah. And you know, and then you get to the end of all of that, and it feels like you've been planning this stuff from the beginning and like paying it off, when a lot of it was just sort of leaving a placeholder there for, you know, story to be determined later, which one works for me because I don't want to know stuff too far in advance, you know? But also, you know, it leaves us flexibility. I mean, the whole, all of this storytelling that we're doing can turn on a dime at any moment. And so I think we're both hesitant to lock anything in too early when there might be a better choice that presents itself later on.
Yeah.
But we knew we wanted Abel in that kind of position.
Yeah.
Which was something we had planned from the start.
And I think that in the very beginning, I sort of thought Abel was going to be the glue between
You fool.
Well, between Ionis and Filnir, partially because I remember I was on a vacation and Sam called me and he was like, I got this idea for my character. You see, his archetype is old man. It's like, okay, I'm not sure exactly what that means, but like, I'm sure we'll, you know, get it, you know, fleshed out a little bit. And then I got like full on backstories written by John and Tim for their characters. And I was like, okay, I don't know how these two people are going to fit together, but I think this old man might be the key for it. The first secret that I came up with for Abel was like the secret of charnel weapons and like how magical items are made. And at first it was a little bit like, flavor only. But I knew that they were in a plane that was an item outside of the Gilbrain for the very beginning. So that was like, oh God, what if this plane that they're in is exactly this thing that Abel has figured out, that, you know, that he has the secret of it, and that it's super old and it's been a little bit on repeat. So that was my secret that I had for Abel. But I only told Sam about how charnel weapons are made. And then I said, and you have to, yeah, you just make it up. Like you tell me, like, but here's the thing. Like, it takes a soul and there's a whole ritual and you can come up with a ritual. And so that was the sort of early days. And then by middle of season two, I knew who Filnir was for sure. Like I knew it, like most of what came out in the campaign. And I knew the things that I wanted Abel to know at that point. And Sam, I can't remember like how much of that I told you. Not a lot of it, I think. I think we were sort of saving it for in action just in case things changed.
Yeah. Well, and it, you know, allows Abel to serve as sort of a storytelling. He becomes then a convenient avenue to convey some of this stuff if necessary. And it sort of makes his position in the group a little different because he's kind of the only one who knows things.
Yeah.
But we had to figure out what the things were to know first.
Yeah. John, how about something from Facebook?
Something from Facebook. Ooh. You said that everything had to do with you. So I'm going to pivot and have something that is for all of us.
Good.
So, Anthony Greenstein.
Oh, what's up, Anthony?
One of our favorites. What's up, Greenstein?
We got to get Anthony on Patreon so he can get some of these.
That's right. And he actually writes, for everyone, was there a time that you thought a TPK would happen? When or why not?
Yeah.
It's a two-parter question. I haven't asked you the second part yet.
Ooh. Oh, well, I've got a real obvious answer, which I think might be shared by other people in the group. Basement of the tower, man, when it was on fire.
Yeah.
And the paladin was wrecking our shit. Yeah, that was. I was like, oh, we might not get out of here. Yeah. We're just like doing healing words to pop people back up. Right. So they, and then they just go down again. And yeah, it was, that was the most on a knife edge I ever felt about TPK.
Hmm. Yeah, she was pretty rough.
Yeah.
Mine was a different paladin. Go ahead.
Well, I was going to say, because I think also when you get to later levels, you have so many contingencies and so many hit points and so many, you know, you have more tools in your tool belt. It's those early levels where things get really dicey.
Yeah. 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 I agree. And mine was Walter Faust.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, when we started fighting Walter Faust, we had already had a number of battles.
Like at the end of season one?
Yeah, end of season one. We had already did the Battle of the Briar, and then you guys ran off and fought somebody fought some undead in the woods, and then Ionis had just fought this wizard and this bard in the woods. Mm-hmm. And then we come back together and we're like, let's just go right up on the paladin. Let's just do it. and then he shows up and then Pariso takes over two of his guards. And they just start attacking. Yeah. I'm like, oh, no. Ionis can't do this.
I remember that. I ran so fast.
The best use of expeditious retreat we saw all campaign, probably.
Yeah.
But I was like, we are going down hard. Like, they were attacking Filnir, and they were just chopping him in half. And then Abel was tough, but went down a lot. I was like, if these two go down, it's over. That's it. Because Ionis can't do a damn thing. But yeah, that was, I thought that was going to happen, but we were able to pull out of that one. I don't know. What about you, Tim?
Oh, that's tough. I don't know. There were definitely some moments near the end that felt like we were walking into danger. I don't know. Walter Faust was probably the earliest one. I got to agree with you. I think, you know, when we do like one battle after another and then don't get a chance to stop and properly recuperate before we're pushed to our limits again, those ones just feel just kind of brutal.
Yeah. Yeah. So, and it's like Sam was saying, such low level.
I mean, you know, listen, I had a genuine fear for my character in like episode 4 when that heat metal came on, or whichever episode it was. I was like, and this was, I was still pretty new to concentration, which is why it played the way it played. I was like freaking out. I'm like, there's nothing that I can do. I mean, clearly what I should have been doing was pelting the guy who was concentrating and breaking the concentration. Right, but, <right. laughs> you know, I was too new to know it at that point. So it was like, it was like looking for any sort of loophole to get out of it. Although I think that at that point we were still under your safety blanket, so to speak, Tom.
Yeah, I think I told you 5th level I was going to be, you know, at least a little bit protecting you. Yeah, I mean, for me, and you end up dispatching these people pretty quickly and surprisingly, but it was the archers that were 600 feet away from you Robert's gift.
Oh, yes.
Because they had poison, they had all those things, and like...
And there's no reason for them to stop shooting.
And they're just going to keep shooting at you, a wide open field. I think Ionis ended up doing... I think it was like 7th level. You were 7th level, and I think Ionis like ended up doing a dimension door or something like that, and a fireball. Like, I mean, it was like...
No, that and there were some super crazy rolls in that episode.
I did a sleet storm to block vision.
Yes.
That's right.
And
that's
then I was using the lucky feet a few times when this guy was attacking me. I was like, lucky feet, you miss.
I'm still kind of like, I want to give you that, but I don't think you saw those guys enough to know. Like, rules as intended, it's sort of hard to be like, you know, this guy's 600 feet away from you and you're like, ooh, like, you know, like I'm going to give you bad luck right now. This person who is a dot.
Well, it was the lucky feet was for the guy, the invisible guy.
Oh yeah. That's right.
Quite dark too. Yeah.
Yeah. He was trying to hit me and I was just like, I was just inexplicably lucky.
Does lucky work with someone you can't see? I can't remember. I remember thinking,
you're just lucky, Tom. You're just lucky.
It was just luck. Like he missed because I was just lucky.
You're not like inflicting the luck on him.
Yeah, yeah.
You're just
the lucky
luck.
Guy.
Yeah.
Yeah. Just, okay.
The universe.
Of luck right there.
Yes.
Well, I also think it's interesting though. I mean, obviously there are a lot of things you can do, Tom, to keep us from TPKing potentially, but I also think we all understand that part of what makes this interesting is that there's this element of randomness and chance, and things happen not necessarily when they're narratively supposed to,
right? Yeah.
Or at the most dramatic moment, or at the most in the most satisfying way, and that's part of what makes it interesting.
I tuned that encounter up too high, and I tuned up the monks too high. Mm. I think I actually pulled some punches, like pun intended, when you were fighting Karateka's the monks then.
And Robert's Gift, yeah.
And Robert's Gift again. And they were supposed to get 5 attacks. And I think their first round, they all got 5 attacks. And they were able to stun. And I think, poor Tim, I think got stunned in that first round. And it was like, oh, they could just do this all day long. Right. And it's 5 attacks. And I think during that combat, I think that's the only time in the whole campaign that I had something set up beforehand and I felt like it was keyed up too high, and I just took it down. I took it down to 3 attacks. Anyway, that was also a near TPK, even though to listeners, I don't think it felt like that. To me, I was like, oh, this is going to kill them, like, for sure.
Right.
So
what else we
John,
got?
What's the second part of that question, John? Was there something else?
There was a second part of that question. I think you might have answered it a little bit, but it was for you, Tom. What would you have done if there was a TPK?
Oh, we would have just, I think,
started the world goblin market. Really,
yeah, right, right. Well, I think the world was rich, and I think we were all still wanting to explore the world of the Gilbrain more. I think we may have had a second campaign in the Gilbrain.
Nah, yeah.
I think something like that. Filnir would have, let's see, at the point where my TPK would have happened, Filnir, I already knew, was just going to pop up again.
Mm-hmm.
And so, unfortunately, Tim would not have been allowed to make a new character, but these other two guys would have been.
And I say, sweet.
You say, like, yeah, awesome. Yeah. So that would have been, you know, campaign number 2. Would have been Filnir and 2 other dudes. I don't know.
That's wild.
So let's see here. I have something
very interesting.
Yeah, it would have been kind of cool. I mean, and I don't know. It may have been Shnobik, but it may have happened in Hark City or Adair.
Well, John would have gotten Shnobik then.
Well, I was going to say that does lead into another question from John Gravina. He says, who were John and Tim's backup characters if Ionis and Filnir had been hit with the Disintegrate spell instead of Abel?
Well, I'll start. His name was Filnir. He's a Hexblade warlock who lost his master. Maybe his own fault, maybe not. He doesn't really remember. And there's a lot he doesn't remember.
Yeah. Just popped up brand new. What's happening?
Yeah,
I love it. And yeah, Sam totally stole my idea, and I was going to do Shnobik. And but Sam was the one that got hit with the Disintegrate spell, and so he decided to do Shnobik.
Well, and I will say at the time I didn't know that John was sort of thinking of that as like a backup character when I stole it, but it does make sense. Although then we wouldn't have gotten all the fun like brother interaction, which was 80% of the fun of playing that character.
Yeah,
and the other thing I was going to say was Sam getting Shnobik is probably the best thing that could have happened to Shnobik.
Right.
Like, you played the hell out of that character. I'm just saying. No problem. Seriously. I was
I mean, like you said, of course, I did.
So John N in the YouTube chat just asked Sam, who was your backup character?
If Shnobik, that's a good question. I think I might have tried to convince Tom to let me take Bezalith Luitl.
Yeah.
Wow.
Wow.
Oh, you think that would have worked, Tom?
Sam, I actually offered it to you. if you don't remember.
No, I don't remember.
Yeah, I actually offered it, and Sam is the one who was like, I don't want to have all that extra information, because mm-hmm. Bezalith had a whole other thing that she was up to that we actually,
all the elf stuff. Yeah.
Yeah. We got to it a little bit, but it didn't end up being quite as central as it could have been. Mm-hmm. But Sam didn't.
You would have had a hook there because her, you know, clan is wiped out.
Yep.
And, you know, she comes back to take revenge or find out what happened or whatever, and then gets roped into everything. But yeah, part of what made Shnobik so appealing is I think the hardest thing to replicate in the group is the interactions and the history with each other.
Right.
That the characters develop. And so that's what made Shnobik the obvious choice, is like, okay, we already have an established relationship that then is something that we can play.
Yeah.
Somebody which would have been harder Florn. With anything else.
I think someone could have been Florn, and there would have been a little bit of that. But again, you know, I sort of knew Florn's parents were killed by Filnir, or by mm-hmm. the, you know, the last time.
By the duo of Ionis and Filnir.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And so I would have, that would have come out a lot sooner. There was a lot of little things like that I was like, oh, and then this, and then this. It's like, oh God, it's a lot of hours of campaign, but not enough for all right. of these little side stories.
Yeah.
Taylor, is it Hey Bear or Herbert? I think it's Herbert.
It's Herbert.
It's Herbert. Hey, I went to school with that guy. I was like, is it Herbert or
you
Hey
know
Bear?
The goddamn answer.
Metaphysically.
Walking, hiking the trail.
Now, he doesn't say this is for me, so I'm going to throw it to somebody else. Okay. I think I'm going to throw it just to the three of you. Metaphysically, can someone explain what happened at the end of season one?
Fuck no.
What power or powers made the tree? Who was Paraso serving? And who was controlling the ghosts? Seems like the undead army in the final battle at Lake Shire might have been connected. If so, why were they fighting against Ehi?
I can answer that one.
Yeah, you can.
Taylor, you are in the same boat as me and Tim and Sam. The end of that first season and the beginning of the second season, we were like, what the fuck? We had no, we still have no idea.
Mm. Yeah. Well, I mean,
we have our theory. I will say I very purposefully tried not to think too hard about it, because I kind of like, you know, embracing the mystery.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. As a character, mm-hmm. you know, but yeah, I mean, I think it's part of the whole, this is the metaphysical flood, right? The metaphysical, mm-hmm. metaphorical flood to go with the physical liquid flood. But then what they showed up, they were fighting against Ehi. Oh, is he talking about the undead with
undead.
The bone?
Yeah.
The bone lord.
Yeah,
I assume that seemed like a very different manifestation.
I thought those were the ghosts.
Different undead. Yeah, the ghosts at the end of season one were different from the undead at the end of the season four.
Yeah,
yeah, the ghosts at the end of season one were all ghosts, sort of owned by, controlled by the Gilbrain through Ehi, and. And then, you know, those the tree was certainly a part of the love between mm-hmm. the Nodis and Ehi. Like that was before you went to the mountain mm-hmm. and saw the temple inside the mountain. So that was like sort of leading you there. I can tell you what I wanted that to be, that it didn't end up like making it, but that was Ehi's way of calling the Nodis to her, because she thought he was still there and she hadn't heard from him. Hmm. And so, but you know, that was the mystery, I think, was more interesting than like, you know, the rationale of gods or whatever. Mm-hmm. So. Let's see here. Let's see here. Rimnar the Magnificent asks about how the story evolved and at what point did we know that the Gilbring existed with an eternal weapon. We talked about that a little bit already, but then when did we decide that Filnir was 3,000 years old? How come we never saw Filnir turn into a demon, like in his memory?
Are you sure it's not Rimnar the Magnificent?
I think it might be the Magnificent.
He's one of our patrons, by the way, for those looking on the YouTube chat or whatever to try to find him. But thank you for being a patron and supporter. I mean, I don't, I think there was always a tell in the memories that they may not have been real or, or, you know, that, you know, I mean, if he's been there for 3,000 years, there's certain things that have happened that have changed that he's done, as Ihai told us at the end. Like, she had I had her realm in my hands multiple times before and not given it to her, right? Yeah. I mean, it was something with like 7 times or something that she had asked for it, and I'd basically just refused. So I'm presuming that, you know, maybe that could have happened. Maybe I could have turned into a demon, and it just didn't happen in this campaign.
Yeah, that's for sure. For sure. I mean, and I think, you know, 3,000 years is a lot of time. And especially it's a lot of time for someone who continuously becomes a super powerful warlock. There's a lot of shit a warlock can do. And you know, I think the manifestation of a demon, like, that's a true polymorph. I did not think that Filnir was controlled by a demon. Now, I'm not positive that he was a half elf. Like, I'm not positive that he wasn't necessarily like the original, the OG, you know, the OF. that he may have been, he may be a demon.
That reminded me of a thread that I don't know that we ever resolved, which was the demon in the control room.
Yeah.
Through the door.
You could have gone
in ascension,
there.
The ascension door.
Yeah. You never went to him.
Yeah.
You
it was dark
backwards.
In there.
Yeah. You walked backwards. I wrote a little puzzle.
And then we had more pressing issues.
Yeah. And you never went back there. Yeah, for sure. That was another person put there by Filnir. You know, when you walked in there, I was like, maybe this is Filnir. Maybe that's the real Filnir.
Ooh.
That was my original thought. But like, if you don't go talk to the guy, it's not a story. It doesn't.
Right.
It's not.
It almost
that's not the
matter,
story.
Right?
That's not the story. Then.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that was what I was prepared
for. Not
for.
Not canon. Not canon.
Yeah, that's right. I was prepared for that guy to be Filnir.
Mm-hmm.
And to have been piloting Filnir. the half elf.
Mm-hmm.
Because I was already preparing for the Goblin Market, and I knew that mechanic,
you wanted to have people piloting people.
That mechanic was going to be playing out. He was in a safe room inside this, like, you know, the center of the world kind of thing.
Good grief.
Is there other stuff from Facebook, John?
Oh, absolutely. And I think we've now gotten to this question from Kevin Malberg. What do you envision your characters doing in the future after it all ends? And I think we should get both characters from Sam.
I'm gonna throw in with this something from Todd's story, which relates to this, and it is, will Ionis ever return to Monterra to reclaim the throne? And if so, what are the implications for MCM? I think those are together.
Yep, those are together. Absolutely.
I don't think we should spoil too much of MCM though, because there are people who potentially haven't heard that campaign yet.
That's right.
You know, obviously, I think we've mentioned it a few times in the main feed, but
MCM is Mountain City Mayhem. Yeah. It's the Patreon
campaign.
campaign.
The premium campaign.
Yes.
Sam calls the premium campaign.
And based in Monterre.
Yes.
The mountain city.
The home of Ionis, yeah.
Right.
I do keep threatening John that Ionis is going to show up in MCM and I'm going to get to play him. but I'm not sure if I'm that mean.
Do it.
Because I will say, and I think we talked about this before, I do think in terms of like identifying with our characters or like the characters being a piece of us. I mean, I think we're all pretty attached to our characters, but John has a special place in his heart for Ionis.
That is true.
I mean, listen, the way we play these characters is so different just as players, right? Like we talked about this, but John had the idea of Ionis, had a level progression built. Like he went through all of that, like before the campaign had started. We did character creation, and he knew who Ionis would be if he hit level 20.
Yeah,
right.
Well, he knew what spells and abilities.
Yeah. But he was going to build the character that way on the character sheet.
But I have to say, RP-wise, it's different. he stuck to it though. Like I just could never. There's no. I could never stick to something that I did at level one. I mean,
that's why I don't do that much prep.
Yeah, I mean, for me, half the fun is like, ooh, what about this? And oh, what about that? Yeah.
Well, I would feel differently with a different kind of character. But with a wizard, especially if his whole MO is that he loves books and loves finding new books, I was going to make sure that if we ran into other wizards that I was going to grab those spell books.
Yeah.
So it didn't matter as much what spells I would choose because I would get a shitload of other spells that I could work with later. You know what I mean? So, I had an idea of what I wanted to work with. But, you know, if I found out later that I was wrong about certain spells, I could just lean into the RP and be like, I grabbed that book. What's in that book, dude? Then you would, did I find this spell in that book? And you're like, yeah.
Skywrite.
Now I've got that spell. There's
eight copies of Skywrite.
Like one of them was water breathing. You were like, do you have water breathing yet? I was like, I have a book. You were like, you see water breathing in the book. I'm like, yes.
Right.
Yeah.
So
I think Phil Neer and Ionis probably have the most complicated answers to this question.
Yeah,
probably.
Right.
So we'll start with you, Sam.
I think Abel is. I mean, we already know what he did, for the next 3,000 years or whatever. But yeah, I think I do think that was pretty fun to get into with Tom and just play him as sort of a different character and try to think about how things would be different if you'd been living in a world that you have this much control over for that amount of time.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's one of my pet peeves, and not that we like delved into this like super deep, but I always hate it when you have like a character on a show or something and a vampire or something who's supposed to be 500 years old and they don't put any thought into how would that change how a person is.
Because they'll put on, like, they'll do this thing where they have experience.
500 years old and still into 17-year-olds.
Yeah, like, they have new experiences, new memories. But, like, if you're the kind of person who lives 1,000 years, you're not a person anymore.
Yeah.
Like, there's something that has fundamentally changed in your brain.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And I think, I really like where Shnobik ended up. I was really happy with the resolution we got for that character. And I think he's, probably needs some therapy that he's not going to get. But, trying to sort of start over and be the better person that he couldn't figure out a way to be in the Gilbrain.
Where did he go?
Through the door.
He didn't know.
Yeah, that one's going to kill me for the rest of my life, I think.
Yeah.
But where did he go, man?
But where is it?
Where is it?
Yeah, I think he walked right into Baldur's Gate.
Yeah, right.
Was Three. Immediately shanked by a hobo. Yeah. No, that would be pretty sad.
That would be terrible.
What's Filnir gonna do? Like, what's the god of the realm gonna do?
I mean, I think he's always wanted the realm to be at peace. So, yeah. You know, I think he would, to the extent that he can, kind of, you know, try to set things up where the people and the different, you know, sort of forces living there have reason to sort of cool it down. Almost, you know, I don't know, maybe...
Just like Agador weird. The Scales.
Put it back, yeah.
I mean...
Put it back into, you know, like, I mean, not necessarily like a Cold War, because now those kingdoms are, you know, essentially gone and defunct, right? I mean, yeah, I think he would try to find a way to make people sort of, you know, provide them the resources that they'd be happy with to not feel like they have to go, you know, conquer someone else to go get what they have. Or
He wouldn't support Ionis to go on a mission of conquest to bring all of the kingdoms under heel?
He certainly, Ionis would be bending his ear, I think, if that's, you know, that's what Ionis wanted. But I think he'd play diplomatic and, you know, remind him that this is, you know, their realm to shape for sort of however long they have, you know, hold
They've
on
got
it.
Time.
Yeah, till the next Filnir shows up and unthrones us, right?
Yeah.
And then we figure out where we're trapped and if we feel like we need to escape and the whole thing circles all the way around, you know?
Does Ionis care about his mom anymore?
Ooh.
Like, I wonder about that. Like,
I mean, I know Filnir would be checking on his sister and, yeah, you know, that kind of stuff and making sure they're good, but yeah.
Yeah, I mean, Ionis still cares about his mom. He still cares about his family. It's just he's just viewing things very differently. He would definitely find Mr. Percy and Galwinia, and he would apologize to Mr. Percy for everything and try to solidify their relationship, give them, you know, copious amounts of money from his little super bank room.
And, I mean, you're the creator, you can just make him a patch of land.
A villa,
yeah.
You know, come on. You guys have looked at what happens when the Fed makes money. Mm-hmm. Like, everything has consequences. And if I'm still the DM for that place, I'm telling you, it's going to be inflation through the roof.
Probably so. They'll try to figure out a way. They'll figure out a way to fix that. But yes, he will try to make amends with Mr. Percy. He will go and get his aunt from Adair and take her back to Monterre. If it's talk to his uncle and say, look, if it's true love, I'll give her back. If she can't live without you, then you know it'll be made painfully obvious, and then we'll work something out. But right now, she was given to you as a slave, so she's coming back home.
Yeah.
And then yeah, he will go back to Monterre and he will try to at least bring it under heel. But I think in my mind, Ionis will go to Hark, Adair, and Monterre and take those for the Gilbrain and say and then set up a democratic ruling council in each city. And then create a simulacrum of himself that runs each city.
Bonus one, bonus two.
Exactly. Yeah. And then, you know, just and you know, just the person who's kind of in the background calling the shots or keeping an eye on everything and making sure that things are running smoothly. But you know, it's like he's like Filnir now. It's just we just want peace. The thing is that you don't get peace unless there is someone or a group of people working really hard to maintain it.
Mm-hmm.
And so that is going to be his lot in life.
Yeah.
He's just going to maintain the peace by taking everything.
So Liquid R asks how I keep all the plot points in order, and he gives me some options: OneNote, Google Drive, scraps of paper on a corkboard with red string, stacks of tightly scribbled composition notebooks. So I mean,
and if you haven't seen Tom's handwriting, it is
is sort of high. So I do use Notability.
That's a security protocol.
Yeah,
I do use Notability. And I write everything by hand. And then what I do is when we're about to start a new story arc, and these guys don't always know that we're starting a new story arc, I actually write up what I think is going to happen, and I bring in connections from the past. And then if we hit like two or three story arcs and something from my notes doesn't make it into that little like overview that I have that I keep running, then that basically didn't happen. And so that's one of the reasons why I have to keep asking John what the hell his mom's name is, because I never put Sheandolin in there. And it's one of the reasons why Tim is like, wait, who was the other? I had three other sisters, because they never came up again.
Right.
You know? Mm-hmm. And so I didn't keep them, and I didn't hold them as tightly as I should have probably. So yeah. So I use handwritten notes and Notability, and then I occasionally share my long screeds with the guys on with Sam and John and Tim through the notes app and Apple. That's it. That's the whole thing. Then we have another one.
Wait,
here.
They don't want to know about my meticulous note taking for MCM?
No, you don't take. Sam doesn't take any notes.
I actually use the notes function in Roll20 fairly regularly. And back when we were doing we had that transcribing app for a little while. We were using Otter. It was actually really handy because you could do like a word search. And it would tell you what time code in what episode that part showed up, and you could go back and listen to it. Yeah.
Yeah.
But that was a lot of work.
Yeah. And also we have a lot of made up words.
Yeah,
right. We do. Right. We do.
Yeah.
Although Otter AI is getting better and better at like identifying them and then spelling them the same every time someone different says them.
It's like this is a word that you use, whether it means anything or not.
That's right. That's right.
Yeah.
Turkey F says, how much did you have planned that didn't happen because the party never went in that direction? After the Goblin Market, Turkey.
He learned his lesson.
I stopped doing that shit. Yeah. So there were three or four other things. There was characters that I rolled up entirely that like they just ignored, you know, like a guy in the bar. You know, that they didn't talk to after I like described him. You know, I'm like, listen, guys, I described him. So there must
therefore,
be something to it.
He's an NPC,
yeah, therefore,
not just yeah. set dressing.
Still a set.
Maybe still a set works for the Goblin Market, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. So, not a whole lot after that, actually. And if you're a DM already, you know, like, the lesson that I didn't really have, which is, you know, you don't have to know what's in the chest in every room that no one goes into. You just need to know there's a chest that someday they're going to open, and here's what's inside of it. And if they don't go to the room you think has it, then you can put it someplace else. Like when you're doing a narrative like we're doing, like we're not making, you know, like we're not making a campaign like Wizards of the Coast puts out. And they're like, in this room, with a DC 27, like, you know, sleight of hand skill check. Mm-hmm. This thing is there. Like, if you miss it, you miss it there. And that's kind of fun. That's part of the fun of that kind of campaign. But that's not what I'm making.
Yeah, I think also like part of what's appealing to that for people is it makes it feel like the world has sort of an external reality independent of what the characters are doing.
Mm-hmm.
But I think for the kind of storytelling we do, it ends up working better every time someone opens a chest. You just ask yourself, what's the most interesting thing that could be in that chest?
Yeah, mm-hmm. That's right.
And you treat it as almost like an improv story prompt. and then roll from there, you know.
It's yeah.
Because the world having any sort of like external consistency to it is less important than having an interesting story moment right there.
Yeah. Or it can be procedurally generated.
And, well, yeah.
And you can just be like, I don't know. I'm going to give you a role.
Because sometimes the random stuff ends up being more interesting than what you might have been able to come up with on the fly.
Right.
Yeah.
Any other really good ones about Every War Must End, John? Because I do have three about Goblin Market that I think...
You're going to hit one, hold two, on. Three? Okay.
There's a couple in the YouTube chat.
Okay, all right.
Somebody you guys might know, Akshay. Oh,
yeah. Oh, Akshay! Eamon is there! Akshay's listening, and so is Beth, but I bet this is all Eamon. This is Eamon's question. Eamon, I love you, man. I love you, buddy.
What was your favorite moment of the whole campaign? It's kind of a big question.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And I'm not sure that I know the answer, and I've been staring at this question for several minutes.
I got
minutes
two
now.
Real easy answers.
All right, let's go to Sam then.
The most emotional I got throughout the whole campaign was definitely Abel's last episode.
Mm-hmm.
Like the Abel's death episode was something else. Like, I don't know if I'll ever have another gaming experience that was like that, or storytelling experience like that. It was just on another level. The most pure glee I ever got from a moment in the game was when Shnobik turned Jesus of the Orc Wars into his vampire thrall. That was just because I had planned it for so many episodes. I mean, not so many, but like two or three episodes, put the plan into action. And, you know, it sort of walks that line of like, you know, I hate it when people are like, yeah, my character's a bad guy, so he'd like steal stuff out of the other character's backpacks. You know, having characters working at cross purposes that way can get just really annoying and counterproductive. But it was a situation where it was like, ooh, I kind of got to like surprise Tim and John too in a way that was really fun.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. You mean fucked up. I was like,
no, you have to go. I have it here.
So terrible. Ugh, that was so good. It was like, yeah, you guys ever watched
the
Good Place
where I did all those salad puns? Yeah.
You guys ever watched the Good Place where Jason Mendoza's like, you just throw a Molotov cocktail, then you have a different problem. That's how I felt. I just turned the bad guy into a vampire. Now we have a different problem. It's like, Jesus. Of the Orc Wars.
Of the Orc Wars.
What was your favorite moment, Tim?
Ooh.
What's your favorite fourth level or lower spell?
Fourth. I mean, you know, this campaign took us in places that, you know, kind of like Sam, there were just like moments in the storytelling where you're just like, I didn't know that would go there. I think going through the whole memory of Edgar, like there was a lot of real emotion in that I didn't think that, you know, one that I would ever have to tap into or, you know, sort of would be able to tap into in that, you know, in that space. And obviously, I think, you know, high praise to you guys, because this is, we've now been playing this together for so long where I feel like this is a safe space to do that, even though we're putting this out for everybody to listen to, right? It doesn't, you know, you sort of forget about that in the moment, like, you know, just like, all right, we're going to take it here. You know, I'm sure there's another one. I mean, that's just from like a player point of view as opposed to like a story point of view. I don't know. I mean, there was like that one smite where I just like blew somebody up. That was really, really fun too. You know what I mean? Like just
when the likes planning those big numbers, pays off. Baby.
Yeah. Yeah. Exactly. You're just like, okay, you shoot him, you crit, you just go, you know what? Yeah, we're going to smite him. And then just like dead. You know, and it's not like a nothing level two, you know, goat or something. Like it's, you know, it's like a big monster that could be a big threat, and you just like the dice just go your way, and it's just so satisfying.
Yeah,
and it doesn't happen that much.
I mean, John, I want yours too, but I just was thinking about I was thinking about the moment when Fielder's like, tell us something about Ionis. And then Percy goes in and like delivers that like,
oh my gosh,
heart wrenching.
Oh man.
Yeah.
You know, none of that was planned. But
no, that was
me,
so good.
To me, in the realm of like planning for a long time and having it pay off in the moment.
Yeah. Yeah.
This is about me and you guys. This right. is not, I don't even know if it like played well on the radio.
Yeah, we don't get not. Feedback aside from comments. So we have no idea.
But like when I had you all read those poems and then I edited the audio with the so that the center of the world like messages were being received and like echoing back in, and to me it worked, and I could not believe that it worked, and because I could see your faces when I was rolling it out and you were all still kind of like, what the fuck is this guy doing? And it took extra time. You had to like, I sent you the text to read and you had to, you know, record it outside of when we normally play. And then like you all were so happy. And I think you were happy because I was happy, but I don't care. Like I was like, oh, this thing happened. Anyway, so that was probably my moment, which had nothing to do with the real.
No, but that's the fun of, arc. You know, that's the fun of, you know, being the
You
DM
take and, a risk and it paid off.
Like, yeah.
That's, yeah.
I feel like I've read some Reddit threads about people like planning stuff, like when they're at an actual table and they've got like things that they open and they're like, they lead them to things that are like hidden in the backyard and stuff. And it's like, they may never get there, but you get them there. And then it's like this whole thing where it gets you off the table and it turns into a scavenger hunt.
Yeah.
And it just adds an extra level of immersion. So,
so cool.
Yeah.
My similar thing like that from MCM is the lag fight.
That's Mountain City.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
You know, you just take a chance. You're like, I got a crazy idea. I don't know
that
how it's going to
so
play.
Interesting.
That was awesome.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's so interesting.
And
then
not on
just
Patreon.
Like,
it's not that deep into Mountain City Mayhem. I don't remember what episode it was, but.
5 or 6, I think it was.
No, it was later than that because we went into the mountain.
We went into the mountain.
It was when you were hunting Illithil,
Death Thrill, Duflorior.
Wait, so I want to know what John's,
what John's favorite?
What's John's moment?
So I've got two. I've got one as a D&D player and one as an actor. Okay. So as a D&D player, figuring out that I could use my wish spell to make Jesus of Waterdeep a simulacrum was like that changed the whole thing. Like we had just fought him, he got away, and then it was like, wait, I could create a simulacrum that could tell us exactly where he is and so we could go get him like that. And then the anxiety that whole thing created because we were tired and we still decided, we were like, oh crap, we're gonna go at, like Tim did it so well. He was like, okay, I guess we're doing this. Like it was, that was just an incredible moment. I really like that was wild. Mm-hmm. And then as an actor trying to figure out how to piece my character back together when he, got all of his memories back from his, from all that time, spent in the Gilbrain with Filnir and Abel that he didn't even remember. Like, first of all, I thought that was amazing storytelling. The fact that everybody's mind was wiped.
Better than Streetcar, better than Rent. Keep going. I got you. I got you. I'm with you.
Absolutely. Just incredible storytelling. But the fact that their minds were wiped and that they had had a campaign before this campaign that they didn't even remember. And then seeing all of that and then trying to be my character again. And piecing all of it together, but like having all of that like just hit his brain all at once and have him just be completely insane was awesome for me. I just really enjoyed, whether that came together or not, I really enjoyed doing that.
Well, great question, Eamon. I'm just thank you. I'm so glad. I hope you're still awake. I hope you're still awake.
Yeah. While we've been talking here, like, I mean, I could talk about favorite moments for like another hour, you know, at least. Yeah. Like I've got such a long list of.
Well, you can do a separate. We can do another live stream of Sam's favorite.
The
moments.
Eagle going up in Lakeshire.
The eagle going up Lakeshire. Great. Ionis's first phone call to his mom.
Awesome.
Incredible. And like probably the first moment listening to it where like I actually got chills down my spine listening back to it. It was so good. Going into the Donatus's mountain, like
yeah,
incredible. Yeah. And then the whole like weird like three-way plot we had going on in there, delivering the rock baby and the him fighting Ed, you know, Paraso, and yeah.
Yeah,
that was incredible.
I feel like I should go back and listen to this campaign.
That was good. Really some magical episodes in there. That whole up to the mountain and then over to Robert's Gift. There were just so many good episodes in there.
Yeah. So I do have another question from Spencer Udelson. I think which we've gotten before, but now that it's the end of the campaign, it still holds water.
For same answer.
For each of the dads, who was your favorite NPC throughout the whole campaign, and why was it James?
It's the James.
I mean, he was notorious.
He was really fun.
He was scary and threatening, and Tom had a great voice for him and a great presence, but he also did that proper villain monologue. Excuse me, sorry for the beeping. Good timing. You know,
we don't hear it.
I hear it.
There's no way you don't hear it. But yeah, I mean, he was just a great character with his own, you know, true wants. Again, the voice just made it, you know, more fun, and his sort of intention of like talking things through, you know, that's why it's a trope in the movies, but it's so good. Yeah.
He was my favorite.
This is a hard question.
I have a tie between...
Which part? The why is it James part?
Mine is actually not James. I have a tie. Actually, maybe I don't. My favorite NPC was Felipe Madumba.
Mm. Nice.
Because he was an idea.
We heard about him so much before
then we meet him, and he's this old decrepit character. Turns out it's not even him.
And then he pops up,
but when he pops up, we are now so far beyond where he was. Yeah. That he looks terrible. It's like, you're holding us back, Felipe. What are you doing? But like,
it was just access.
Yeah. he was an awesome character. I loved having him with us because he was actually really good for what he could do. But it just wasn't a whole lot that he could do. But he was great.
I also liked that he was like a terrible general.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. He was an okay ranger, but he was not good at leading people. or tactics or strategy or any of the things that make someone a really
But he thought he was. And it was really great earning his respect.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like through battle. I feel like we earned his respect with that Jesus of Waterdeep battle, where we created the simulacrum and then we brought him along, and he was like, yo, what the fuck is going on?
Yeah.
And yet we came out on top, and he was like, okay, maybe these guys actually know what they're talking about.
I've got a less conventional answer. I'm going with Pawson.
Yeah. Pawson was fun.
As a character, he could have very easily been a one note, one joke character and sort of started out that way. But like, especially as he became more attached to Filnir and just sort of became, because Filnir was such a, like a buttoned up character, and Pawson could just be like the raging id, just feral, all about his bodily impulses, whatever they may be. And having the two of them bounce off each other, I thought was always fun.
I mean, you were going to kill him.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
You know? And you decide, and I remember the moment Tim decided to have Filnir cast Charm Monster because he just got it on level up. And instead of something else, which would have just instantaneously blown this, he was talking earlier about doing the smite. Like if he'd have hit a smite on mm-hmm. Pawson at that moment, instead of charm person or charm monster, done. It's over. Yeah. Like I think he had like 20 hit points left, 15 hit points left or something like that.
And I will always and forever love Despo Goodshower.
Yeah.
And that was my tie. It was like between Felipe and Despo. Despo, in my opinion, was our best NPC.
Mm-hmm. That's like the objectively right answer.
Yeah. I mean, episode 1 to episode 110, Despo Goodshower.
I still yell Goodshower, Spear Shower whenever I throw something.
I mean, she was just, she had gone through so much, and she was just so tough. And could hang with us at every point in the game.
Yeah. Yeah.
And didn't just go along. Had her own agenda, own things, and was not real happy with us a lot of the time, too. Yeah.
All right. So we're getting close to the end. We've been on for an hour. I have a couple of questions here from Gollum Market. Is it time for that, Tim?
Sure, it can be. Sorry, I'm printing my son's homework, which he can't find. This is real Dungeon Dad stuff. I'm doing dad stuff real in the middle of this. So keep it going, guys. Keep it going.
Because Tim is giving us hand signals as though we're
not. No, I'm talking to other people.
In video. Live.
That you can't see behind the curtain. I am the man behind the curtain in this. I am running all of this, but I'm also trying to print stuff for my kid.
So let's see here. Oh, before we get that, Todd Story wants to know about those demons coming up from down below that Bezalith was digging the light well for. Yeah, I mean,
he's not the only one. With your bottom. Yeah,
he's not the only one that wants to know.
It's there.
They're there.
They're still a problem.
Yeah,
there's still a problem that Filnir and Ionis are going to have to deal with. They're a big problem. They were here before Filnir was here, so that's the weird thing. This is like they're really serious. I think we ended the campaign because it felt right to end it. There's still shit they have to do, stuff they have to do.
Aemon's watching.
Aemon's still watching. Sure. I'm sorry, Aemon. I'm sorry, Beth. I'm sorry, Akshay. All right. Dead Rogue asks, what realms do the crew hope to engage in through a tent in the Goblin Market? Goblin Market's coming up soon. One of the things is that these tents are these multiplanar like spaces.
Aemon says hi, by the way.
Oh, hi, Aemon.
Hello, Aemon.
In the YouTube chat.
They are able to access lots of realms through the tents. So do you guys have places you want to go?
I mean, absolutely, the Gilbrain.
Yeah, you want to go back to Gilbrain?
Just for, like, even if it's a second.
See what's happening?
Yeah, might just happen. See what's happening. How, you know, what's going on over there?
Any other weird places? I don't know. I mean,
nothing specific comes to my mind. I mean, I like the idea of the environments being able to be super different. You know, it's a little bit Marvel or Star Wars of like the every planet just has like a unique feel kind of thing.
This is the desert realm.
Yeah. Right. Exactly. So, you know, it feels like a little bit less like you've got a continent that has seven different climates on it, like in a video game where you're like, oh, you get to the north and there's the snow and then you go east and there's this big desert you have to cross through and there's an oasis. You know what I mean?
Yeah,
I mean, I think it'll be fun to touch on the Gilbrain. I don't think you should do it too soon. I think we should
earn it. Yeah,
and then we just see where it goes.
I'm up for everything.
I was going to say, like, a cool waterfall-y, like, tropical thing, but I was like, we're in the bathhouse. We've got the bathhouse. That might very well be that, right? A bathhouse isn't all necessarily inside if it's in a tent and it's a whole other realm, right? It could be mm-hmm. hot springs attached to all of these things. Yeah. It could be a whole world.
Mm-hmm.
And I think for me, you know, it's less about, and you know, you've got all the sort of the standard 5e, you know, planes and, you know, we could go to the Feywild or whatever. But to me, more than the physical features, I'm interested in this essentially giving Tom free rein to come up with different ways different places work. I mean, you saw the org chart he put together for the Goblin Market. Like, you know, it just like lets him off the leash in terms of, hey, this place works this way. Isn't that crazy? Okay, but we're only here for two episodes and then we're out and we're on to the next one.
Yeah.
So you, yeah. I think you've got a very broad palette here for all of your most interesting ideas.
Well, and I think
in this realm, the only spell is Skywrite.
Yeah. Well, and I think there's going to be a little bit of that that's going to be at play. But I also think, in my mind, the Goblin Market mm-hmm. is the interesting place.
Yeah.
And so coming back there is going to be the bigger part of the story.
And having to figure out a new world, you know, every couple of episodes can really like put the brakes on things.
Yeah.
On like narrative momentum.
Yeah. I mean, so I'm imagining, and who knows what twists and turns this will take, mm-hmm. but I'm imagining that like someone is already telling you what's going on in this world mm-hmm. and you got to go and do this thing for this one person in this castle, and all the background stuff is going to be flavor and interesting, but you're not going to be able to go there and savor it as much as, you know, as unlocking the mysteries of the actual Goblin Market will.
Man, I've had a job I had to travel for before. It's not as glamorous as it's.
Yeah. Eventually every place feels like Topeka.
Mm-hmm.
And I like Topeka.
Topeka what?
If we hadn't already named this bonus episode, I think we would have just found the title.
Yeah. What is the crew going to do to avoid assault in the baths? Pun not intended, but
come on now.
Extra
towels. We covered this. Watch Eastern towels. Promises.
And this is also from Dead Rogue. I should have said this before. Also, what is the best approach for a meeting held in a hot tub? I think that last part is for Sam.
Yeah, Sam, what's the trick?
The trick is not letting anyone know you're conducting the meeting from the hot tub.
So jets off.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Jets off.
Yeah.
And really for meetings that you got to do a lot of listening and not a lot of talking.
Right.
You know.
The ones where you can turn your video off.
I was going to say video off.
No, we have a video off culture at my core.
Nice. Oh, wow.
Nice.
Okay. Yeah. Well, so then why do you even use Zoom, or do you just use the
phone call?
Right.
Okay. So you just use phones.
We use Teams, Microsoft Teams, if you want to get specific about it.
Hey, no.
Is this the high quality content people have come to this live stream for? We use Teams for a variety of
coming
reasons.
To you live on LinkedIn now. All right. And the last one about Goblin Market.
Reddit Live
from Clerk Berserker. Any plans to release the details of this class anytime? Ultimately, you guys should just release some supplemental books, but I'd settle for bits and pieces. That's very
well,
sweet.
Now first, I will just say, and have we released, when's the bonus character creation coming out?
We have not put it out yet.
We haven't put it out yet. It. Saying class might be overstating a little bit.
Yeah.
It's less full-fledged classes and more rules for making these particular characters. They're not like full-fledged D&D classes.
Right. Yeah. Right.
Because the combined character is playing as a traditional D&D class.
That's right.
And so each of these others are essentially playing like almost like a half of a class or just
a
NPC plus.
Yeah. And people don't know, really, some people who are listening don't have any idea what any of this is yet. Mm-hmm. I'll just say this. The characters are going to be taking minute control over, you know, beefcakes you know, like pieces of meat that are basically like empty vessels to be piloted.
Hans and Franz.
So, yeah. So we've been using the term pilot for what these folks are doing. That's probably going to stick because it seems to be a really good approximation of this. Mm-hmm. You know, they're basically fighter pilots. And they are, you know, I'm using quotes because you can see it. You know, they're flying the bodies of that are better specimen than them, and they are the class is able to do things like cast spells at a distance through these vessels, and so yes, I will release at some point, probably after a couple of episodes of the Goblin Market. At
you
least
gotta
what
type
I gave
them up
the
nice.
Guys.
Yeah, we'll type them nicely. It is a bit like Ender's Game. That was a YouTube comment that just came up. Yeah, mm-hmm.
Yeah, a bit like Ender's Game, except these guys know that they're actually flying, you know, in the big war.
And no, I don't think any of us made children.
Yeah, that's right. That's
important
right.
Distinction. Yeah.
Some of you look like children.
Some of you act like children.
Yeah.
And as far as the baths are concerned, it's the baths. You don't defend yourself in a sauna. You just go in and hang out. That's just where we're meeting. Who knows?
Listen, man, if a fight breaks out, the fight breaks out. You
that's
don't
just
get to
happens.
Choose where it happens.
Eventually, a fight will break out in the baths.
Yeah.
I feel certain of it.
Yeah.
Start snapping those towels, baby.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I'm not making any promises to these guys about surviving.
You never do.
The way I did,
once.
In Every War Must End. But I will tell you this. The Goblin Market certainly will not run red with blood while you're very low level.
Mm-hmm.
No, you got to save the big story points like that till work.
We've got some
episodes in the can.
That's right. That's right. Like,
if you start with that,
this
campaign is going a very different direction.
You're not going to have an all-out assault on the baths like in episode 3 or 4. Maybe
you
5.
We gotta start. Maybe. We gotta feel not until we feel real comfortable there.
Yeah, right. That's right. Oh man.
Well, you guys have any other quick Every War Must End questions? I know we moved over to Goblin Market, so maybe it's just time to say toodaloo, but
I've got a quick one for Tim.
Okay.
Right before we cut it off here. How do you suppose Filnir's famous cream puff recipe would have changed after all this?
Ooh. Let's see, what was it? It was it purple lingonberries?
Is that yeah.
Is that what we said you it got was? It.
This is what Sam looks like a lot while we're recording, by the way.
Yeah.
You're missing it.
I take great pleasure in these things. And I also take great pleasure in the fact that although John said it was going to be a quick question, I knew it wasn't going to be a quick answer.
Can't be a quick answer.
You know, I mean, I don't know that it would have changed that much, except now that he's the god, he doesn't actually have to bake them, so he just can, you know, boop.
I like it.
I did that in sync, it almost seemed like.
Yeah, wait, but here's the question. Do you think he actually would, like, mana them into existence? Like, I kind of feel like
The baking was part of the ritual.
He's
part
the
of
kind
it.
Of god. Yeah, like, absolutely. He's gonna do the baking. Now, he might mana into existence a brick oven stove,
right?
And
right,
the wood to burn it,
yeah. And maybe not having to mill the flour himself,
pick his own lingonberries. Yeah,
no, makes
the ingredients will show
appear.
Up. He'll just you know, zap over the sous chef work, the prep work, and it'll just
substantiate it.
Yeah.
So it's the process that changes, not the recipe.
Yes, I think it simplifies a little bit. There's a couple of YouTube questions. They're quick, so I think I can just...
He's certainly not cleaning any of it up.
No, no, that part just...
Only the fun parts of cooking.
Right. Todd Story on YouTube chat asked if
what's
the
up,
Yasmanki and the gold houses ever got wrapped up. They did not. The Yasmanki are still in in Lakeshire.
In Lakeshire.
We did tell Despo to worry about them and figure them out, but we never had time to follow up and see what properly happened. And then that town, I presumably, is still slowly sinking under the weight of the golden walls of its houses.
Yeah. I don't know what I was thinking about that thing.
Yeah, I was, and like, then you destroyed my wand. Ionis was going to handle that. He was going to turn it all into money and then get Grigley to put the real houses back.
Yep. New song, new merch. Yes and yes, like just not money. Yet. Yes. We'll get it to you shortly. Yeah. And then I think this is a good one to go out on.
Wait a second. I just want to add one other comment there, yeah. Which is I was very skeptical about a new theme song. I'd grown attached to the existing theme song. It's a banger. It always gets me hyped before an episode because usually Tom will play it introing into the episode. New one's a banger, man. I love it. It's so good.
John's been working on it.
I think you guys are going to really like it. It's awesome.
Yeah.
And it fits.
It's a different vibe. It's a
totally different vibe from the first one, but it fits what we're doing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yep. All right. This last one, funniest moment of the campaign. I'm going to say the Manscaped ad, just because Sam's wearing the shirt, and it's really, you heard it during that month that we were advertising for them, but you really didn't hear it unless you're a patron, and then you got the bonus episode of us, and we released. What we did.
We released a 30-minute episode of us trying to record a 30-second ad.
Yeah. Tangential. Yeah. But it makes your belly hurt that. Laughing.
I'm giggling just thinking about that.
There's been some other moments that definitely got us. Like I can't pull them off the top of my head, but you know, that one every time.
We laugh. A lot.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And that does not change when we were just because we're recording. We laugh when we're together, which is not nearly enough, but when we are together, we laugh pretty much the whole time. And I think most of our listeners know I don't drink hardly at all. And at all.
If you listen to the Philadelphia episodes, you know.
Yeah. And so stuff. Is not a part of it, or not stuff. What do you call that? Substance is not a part of it at all. It is just, we laugh a lot. So I think these guys are so funny. Like, you know, I was dying at something that John said during an episode, and I could have swore he said it, and then he did not actually say it. That's the kind of thing that like happens though. So I mean,
I will tell you, I'm not gonna say this is funniest moment of the whole campaign, but it's one that still makes me laugh. I think I've talked about it before, is when Phil Neer's trying to explain his relationship with Paraso. So they're like, why was it Galwinia who was like, what's with this sword, or why are you beholden to this thing? Filney is like, it's hard to explain. He saved my life. I guess you had to be there.
Start cracking up.
It's the delivery that makes it. I didn't do it justice, but it was that was really good. And then I just laugh anytime I got to be a real dick with Schnobik. And then you guys would be, you just start laughing and go, he's such an asshole.
it was really such
that
an
always
asshole.
That always felt good to me.
I was so delighted. But you know, the throw off line about Jesus of the Orc Wars.
And then, when he showed up as a character,
I was laughing at my own jokes that day a lot.
I thought it was funny in combat, like trying to actually see things from your character's perspective.
Mm-hmm.
mm-hmm. and how Ionis throws acid on these guys and they vanish and then they come back and they're dead.
That was a good one.
And I'm like, yeah, they're vulnerable really to acid one. Damage. When
that
actually
was a good
Snowbik,
recent one. That was great.
Snowbik had just stabbed yeah. the Mets out of all.
Yeah, that was awesome.
But the character wouldn't know it at all. Like that stuff really, that stuff really kills me.
Yeah, that was good.
It's funny because we're all really funny people, but we don't make a really funny podcast.
No.
Like, it's there's stuff to laugh at, but that's not what we're really...
No.
Like, that's not really what we're doing.
No, it's not a comedian's D&D campaign.
Yeah.
I think I talked about this last time we had a Q&A, but, like, you know, that Chris Rock...
Tundick. That was funny.
Yeah,
Tundick.
Funny.
Chris Rock had that bit about, like... Everybody thinks they can be a comedian, you know, and they're like, I'm funny. And, you know, they're living room funny. They're not stand up on a stage in front of people funny.
Yeah.
And I heard that and I was like, ooh, I bet that's true. And instantly knew I was living room funny.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But I feel like this is a medium that rewards living room funny.
Yeah,
I think right? that's right. Yeah.
And that's kind of the vibe we go for.
Yeah.
Because hopefully it's obvious by now after consuming 200 plus hours of our content. You have, but like when you listen to the show, it really is what it's like hanging out with us.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like that's,
yeah.
It's not,
especially the Manscaped episode.
Especially the Manscaped. Yeah.
Or anytime we try to do movie dads.
Yeah. That's it, you're getting us, more or less unfiltered.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yep. All right.
Yeah.
Well.
Oh, guys.
Thanks for coming, everybody.
I
know.
More to come.
Yeah.
And yes. I just want to say, like, we have a new sign off on our Ooh. New campaign. We're not doing that tonight. This is the last episode of Everyone Must End. This is it. This is it. No more. No more. It's my last toodaloo, people. Toodaloo, everybody.
Toodaloo.
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 All right. Where's the end button? Oh, wait. No, I have something else. Hold on.
Wait, how do we hang up?
We're off. No, we're done. We're done. My local broke in the middle because my mic disconnected, but I have... It's fine. I've got the Fives and Scribes playing right now.
Subscribe! Gotta get those Fives and Scribes.
Subscribe. Probably not. Let me check.
Gotta get those 5 subscribes.
Had a crazy week, so.